Welcome to this week's episode of the Make an Impact podcast. I'm joined by Claire Field and Cam Kaur from Parenting Apart program, and we're going to be discussing the approach that they're taking to support parents that are in conflict or separating and how this enables children to have better well-being and emotional well-being. So please do stay tuned and I hope you enjoy this episode.
About 15 years ago, and Claire herself had experienced a lot of childhood trauma through parental separation. She's here now, so I might let Claire
She's here.
explain
Yeah, Claire,
her
so
journey.
you are live. So you're live on LinkedIn, Claire. So just to warn you before you say anything cheeky or rude. but yeah, I was just asking Cam about how Parenting Apart program got started, and yeah, so she was saying it's a shame that you weren't here, and then you appeared miraculously. So yeah, do you want to just talk a little bit about that journey around how Parenting Apart program got started and what your journey's been like the past few years in terms of developing the organization?
Yeah, thanks, Heidi. Well, it seems like a long, long, long time ago, but it's really, I suppose, about 18, 19 years when I set up my contact centre from actually leaving social services, working with them, and really just wanted to sort of offer an additional service to support families going through tough times, and certainly a contact centre where, you know, families could come and feel safe and secure, but also, you know, the children to have a positive experience and to really gain from a sort of a more positive environment at times, really. So from that, we were sort of commissioned and then contracted by CAFCAS to deliver the Separated Information Parenting Programme, which was, you know, for many years now it's been running. So we were one of the first that were contracted. And it really brings parents in groups, not parents together, but different parents in groups, to really help understand that with ongoing conflict, the emotional harm it can cause to children. And, you know, to really try and help parents understand that, you know, by having a more respectful relationship after separation or divorce is truly more beneficial for their children. And what I saw, Heidi, was that these parents were coming from the court arena, because obviously it had been obviously ordered and directed from the courts, as being the parents in the proceedings. Coming having this good information, knowledgeable information, and then really just heading in one direction, that was back to court. So I thought, well, is there a possibility, is there an opening where I could say perhaps to mom and dad, even though they weren't in the same groups, but of sort of coming all to different weeks, the logistics were hard, believe you me. And luckily I've got some really good teams in the admin to help me, because that's not my strong point, as most people cause chaos. And we just started to say to the moms and dads, look, you know, how would you feel coming to have perhaps a cup of tea, cup of coffee with some support to sit down and talk together and look at putting your plan or your arrangements, or at least to discuss them together, to at least know that, you know, you can do it as mom and dad for your children, and continue to be the best mom and dad you possibly can. And honestly, Heidi, it was amazing. The response was really, really positive. So over a period of time, and cut a very, very long story short, because again, you know, I can go on forever. And I bet Cam's smiling as well now, because I can see you smiling. I had a production company come in, and I just said, look, can you help me, watch me, see what I'm doing, to help me start to at least align a process of, you know, involving, inviting, sitting with, helping parents do what I'm doing. They said, yeah. So realistically, they lived, ate, and slept with me for 12 months plus. And I think, you know, they look really good on it, Heidi. Honestly, they did. They did. They really enjoyed their time. No, they were great. They were really good. So what we did was, from that, we managed to outline a process which we could then start to put into a manual. So again, how it was then developed, Heidi, was very much again from the practical sense of really helping and supporting parents. What are their needs? What is it they feel they need? So again, talking to parents, looking at getting, you know, further ideas from how they were feeling. And a lot of them, I think, rightly or wrongly, were saying that they felt quite frustrated within the court arena because of the conflict. Sometimes it's, again, can be heightened when you've got a his and her side, you know what I mean, and solicitors sort of saying one thing and doing another, and one parent saying yes, another parent saying no. But actually bringing parents together and sit down and just to talk about their children and what they think is best for their children, it really started to develop that actually by really asking parents to take back their joint responsibility, removing as much conflict as possible, and really helping them change their mindset from a personal relationship, which is massively different, isn't it? You know, when you're living with somebody, sharing, you know, sort of the close proximity of a home and a house and routine to suddenly living apart, it does make things, you know, hard, difficult. Absolutely, it's a massive change. It's a significant change, but it's then the emotional aspect of it. So it's really helping parents look at then how they can continue to be the best mom and dad going forward now they've chosen to divorce and separate. And it really does come down to both parents sort of saying, you know, actually, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, we can agree to that. Yeah, I can confirm we can do this and do that. And also, most importantly, doing and supporting what is best for their child or children, because every child and children, as we are all individuals. And what their needs are at the time, or their ages, what they're able to digest or to deal with, you know, only the parents know really the best of, because they're mom and dad. So where the development is now, Heidi, is obviously Cam Core came on board with us. It's got to be 5 years ago now. It feels like forever. I'm sure it feels like forever for Cam too. But really helping and assisting in developing the research and also implementing the training program and also the training company, because what we have now done is look at the development around how we can help practitioners support and work with parents who are going through conflict, because it's a difficult role, it's a hard job, and to be able to help practitioners to have a process that they can become, I suppose, feeling more confident in bringing parents together when these parents least want to. They don't even want to speak to them, let alone sit in the same room. And I suppose, Heidi, where I sit very much so is that, you know, if we really are doing what's legally required to help protect children, then we need to at times challenge parents to, in order to make sure that we are safeguarding the emotional needs of children. Do you know what I mean? And only by bringing parents together sometimes and really asking them to concentrate on the children, do we see then perhaps a different side to where they perhaps do need some further strength and support to stop that conflict, because it does, it, you know, it harms children. So I suppose Cam absolutely is the best person to talk about now the further development and the research with the training. But every day we learn something different and new, Heidi, because we're dealing with human beings and we're dealing with families, and there isn't one all for all, one box and tick box. We're all unique, we're all different, and how I parent to how perhaps even you parent, can parents, massively different. So we're not here to say who's doing it right or wrong, but what we are saying is, look, please let us help you. If you're not talking, you're not getting on, don't really like each other, get that. But please, for your children, let us just remind you of their voices. Let's just remind them how much they love you, and they do, mom and dad. Warts and all, they love you both. So what we say to parents is, look, please, if you really, really love your children, which we truly believe you do, then at least please care for what they love.
Wow, sounds so like you absolutely love what you do, Claire. And I love
most of the time we do, but there's times that we
yeah, I think it's probably getting the statutory agencies to work with you is probably the bit that is least enjoyable. Not to say that all statutory agencies are difficult to get on board with these kinds of programs, but I could imagine that it's quite difficult to change a system and get whole systems to work in a way that actually is more beneficial for people.
Okay. And I think it's really, I think, sorry, Claire. I think it's really extremely hard when we've got lots of different systems that children and parents interact with. Just because they're in private law proceedings doesn't mean that's a separate system. Parents, schools, health, children's services are having more and more of these cases within their systems, even though they work operating in this system. And what we're trying to sort of advocate is those systems becoming a little bit more joined up. And I think with our work with the local authorities, that's really helped us to sort of coordinate that a little bit better for them as well, hasn't it, Claire? If anything, helping them to understand when it comes to the funding that they're receiving from the DWP, in the aim of reducing parental conflict. We've been quite instrumental with the local authorities that we've worked with, helping them to think about how our programme best fits in their space so we can reduce some of the safeguarding concerns that children may be experiencing because of their parental relationship.
No, absolutely. And Cam, what I feel very strong about, and I know you back me in a sense that, you know, mediation can be an invaluable tool for parents, and it can. Mm. But when it doesn't work for whatever reason, whether the parents are ready or not, then I do believe, and honestly believe, we all need a choice, not one model fits all. And, you know, these parents today are absolutely, a majority are having to fund everything themselves because legal aid is on a minimal basis. And, you know, at the end of the day, like all of us, I think if we were allowed a bit more of a choice rather than just one resource to go to, I think it would help massively. And this is where we would very much like to work more collaboratively. And I know NAC is looking at, obviously, mediators being together, looking at obviously the benefits of becoming all of us more collaboratively involved, etc. Absolutely. But I do feel that, you know, from a social care point of view, and where we look at some of the parents and where they're at, if they could come and have this choice, and so much as an early help, early intervention, we would save huge amounts of children's emotional well-being, welfare, than we are at the present moment, because we are seeing daily, and I mean daily, cases that have been in the private family law proceedings for over 2 to 3 years. Now, you tell me, as anybody, and even with common sense as a human being walking down the street, if the welfare of a child is paramount within that court arena, how can we then honestly say 2 or 3 years in proceedings with litigation at the highest, the fight is on, with having 5, maybe 6 different independent experts appointed? That is not good for these children. And then we get the cases referred to us, don't we, Cam? And basically between an 8 and a 12 week program, we're meant to sort and clear everything. And I say to my parents very, very clearly, I'm not Nanny McPhee and I haven't got a magic wand. Wish I had, because I'd sprinkle the sawdust on everybody and go, right, let's make everybody happy again. But, you know, when you have been in litigation and certainly in a process for maybe 2, 3 years, even 8 weeks isn't always going to undo it. And I just think the reality, the knowledge, the understanding of the work that we do, I think it needs massive amount of marketing to let people know just the specialist sort of work that we do to work with parents to get the outcomes we do, because it's a very, very skilled set piece of work, massively.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's very, very skilled. It's something that I definitely couldn't do myself. I know you train people to do this work. Cam, do you want to just tell a little bit about how that training happens and what it's like?
Yes, sure. I mean, we are now training. We've now been commissioned by 3 local authorities, Warwickshire, Hillingdon and North Yorkshire. We've been working with them quite closely. The practitioners have a general understanding around child development, adverse childhood experiences, to have a good understanding around safeguarding, because these are some of the things that we need to help our parents to understand regarding when it comes to safeguarding when we're talking about emotional harm. So the content of the training takes place over 3 days. The training is done by myself, Claire, and Dr. Paul Walton, who is a lecturer at Hull University. He's just recently moved out of there, but he's a clinical psychologist and a systemic family therapist. So we've developed a program which fits in really well with local authority teams, where their staff already have a lot of these skills and knowledge. And really, I think sometimes, Heidi, we tend to invest in sort of higher level specialist services. And what we're saying is that a lot of practitioners, especially early help and family support workers, they go in and do a amazing job with families. They do some of the really hard work, and giving them the skills to do this, learning some of those early approaches in systemic family therapy, mentalization, helping those practitioners to upskill them to bring their skills set together and work with families has been really, really helpful for those early help workers, where people don't tend to invest in that much, if that makes sense. We want to have these specialist services in local, I mean, I've worked in local authorities, and we sometimes see this work as being a specialist work where it could be really well handled in the early help arena. Alongside the training, after the practitioners have attended the 3-day training, we also offer them a learning space as well, because it's okay to do some training, but how do I put that into practice? What does that look like? Where are the things? So we give them that reflective space after every 3 months. We do 3 of those. We work with the management team as well to get them to think about how the program can become part of their early help service. And that's been really, really helpful over the last 24 months that we've been doing this. And it's alongside that, the local authorities again are collating data, because we do pre and post questionnaires. And that is what we're hoping to develop further research with your help as well, which Heidi's been actively involved, helping us to think about what are the kind of questions that would be helpful for local authorities to capture, so that they begin to see some of the social return on investment of the money that they're investing in, and how is that beneficial for them in the context of this work.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both you and Claire have mentioned about it needs to be an early intervention. Rather than this 2 years down the line, we then think about this as an alternative to something. How easy has it been to get people or encourage people to take that early intervention approach versus waiting until they've got to the point where they've tried everything and they know nothing has worked, and they consider this then as an alternative option later on?
I think it's both, either or, Heidi. We get lots of families who don't have solicitors, the litigants in person, don't necessarily have the legal resource. And unfortunately, there's a cost associated to our service. So we can't, other than the money that we get from National Lottery, we're unable to support families like local authorities are. So what we want is, lots of families would do this work. We get inquiries, we get 50 inquiries a month where we're offering free consultations to parents. And there's lots of parents that want to do this work, but they just don't have the financial means to do that. And that's a real shame, really, because a lot of those cases could come out of the court arena. So they have no choice but to go through the court, and then they're redirected to resources like ourselves or go back to mediation. But because mediation offers free vouchers, the parents will go and do that, but not necessarily meet the criteria of their family or support them in the way that they need to be supported. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's that parents don't want to do this. I would say that it's the fact that, it isn't offered as an early help at the moment. We're seen as something as a last resort. And I think your report in 2021 highlighted that when you spoke with parents and they'd all said to you, you know, based on your report, that actually, why wasn't we offered this as a first resort when we ended our marital relationship or when we separated? Actually, that would have been really, really helpful for us.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of the things that came out really strongly in that, you know, they'd spent thousands of pounds trying to go through the court process to get a resolution around the children, and actually, you know, they didn't know this option was available. So it's definitely something that came through from the interviews and also the feedback that other parents had provided. It's really, really important. So how are you going about getting more people aware of the programme's existence?
Well, I think working with the local authorities, making them aware that this resource is available and that they can train their practitioners, that's one way. I mean, obviously, we try to promote our services to the legal sector as well. We do regular webinars with legal firms. Me and Claire's always doing these on a monthly basis, where we're working with solicitors, we're helping chambers, we do lots of other webinars. I mean, Claire recently attended the conference which in Birmingham, wasn't it, Claire, with the family law community.
Yes, family justice, the judiciary system, really. And it was really about, again, just getting the judiciary and obviously the legal departments involved, just to sort of hear from what is available for families, because we used to do it through court user meetings and etc. But the important message from that conference is, you know, we do need to have to listen to children, and we do need to know what children's needs are. Not to say that they sit and start dictating, I'll go to school, I won't, and I'll pop to the dentist, no, I won't, and I'll just eat chocolate, and I'm not going to have my greens and vegetables. but very much that children can really struggle with going from one home to another. And unless these parents really can support these transition of cares, but also sometimes the most important thing is the routine within the homes, to where the child might be going to bed at 7 at mommy's, but then suddenly it's going to bed at 9 at daddy's. You know, children get overtired, children can get restless, children then start to behave differently. And I think it really is about saying, you know, what's best for these children. As much as we have parents also, we want 50-50, we want shared care. No, we don't. Mom wants this, dad wants that. But we have to look at what's best for the children. And realistically, that's when the work of the Parenting Apart programme is, I think, critical and very, 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 very important. Because unless we bring parents together, whenever, however, best possible, I know some of them come kicking and screaming and they don't really want to, but deep down, they know it's the best thing to do with some good help. What these parents can prove, and they prove to themselves what they can achieve, is most important, they're doing what's best for their child at this moment in time. Now, whether it needs reviewing in a month, whether it needs reviewing in 3 months, or whether it needs reviewing again in 6 months, that is because it's in the best interest of their child. We could have a baby, you know, that's going from literally 9 months old to suddenly they're 18 months old. 9 months time, that child is going to have a completely different sleep routine, a completely little day-to-day routine, and what she might be doing with mommy and daddy is massively different again. And for that child to have an identity, self-worth, as young children, as I say to parents, they are half of you, dad, and they are half of you, mom. And if you two can't lead the way by showing them that you can support this transition of care, whether it's once a week, twice a week, 50-50, whatever you're doing, then you two are the only two that's letting your child or children down. Not us, not the professionals, you two. So we help create that real environment for parents to take back their joint responsibility and actually to, as I said, change the mindset, put the hidden tools down and start really looking at actually caring about what and how they're doing things going forward, because the child's going to learn from them, not us again, from them. So it's a learning, it's all part of education. I think this is where it doesn't just sit with the DWP, I think it sits with the DfE, I think it sits with care, I think it sits with education, every part of it, because this is a long-term journey. aspect of children going into young adults that unfortunately start self medicating. They can come off the rails, they start doing things that we really do get worried about. And also, you know, the long-term effect then it has within the family homes. And if we don't start really appreciating that, we have to ask the parents to come to the table whenever, however best possible. And even post-separation, even when there has been some physical or domestic incidents in it, 9 times out of 10, that can become a less risk when the relationship stops being personal, but they've still got to be parents. So yeah, lot to learn, still a lot to do. And you know me, Heidi, and as I said, I talk for England, so I'm just conscious that I'm not speaking over again, as I always do, because I am, I suppose, passionate, very committed, but very frustrated. And I'll be very honest, and I say it now, because the system is just letting families down so badly. And then the future and the outcomes for children is scary. And unless we do it different and do it as a collaborative arm, rather than saying, well, I'm doing this, well, I'm doing that, and he's doing this, and we start to lead with really what I call a neutral and also a united front, then I fear for the children today and for the future. So yeah, we need to be doing more than what we're doing. Saying it, but we're not doing it. And I've been banging doors, windows, chairs, I don't know, anywhere I can get in to say, please, please, can we do it different? Please, can we look at doing this? Please, can we do that? Very difficult. It's a stuck system. But yeah, it's good what we do, because at least the parents that come through our door, they just said, wish we'd known about it earlier.
And we think it's really important, where, especially when you are working with families in this context, that they are offered the resource. So those local authorities at the earliest opportunity, you know, mom or dad are ringing saying, I'm having problems, or I'm not communicating with the other parent. Those local authorities have got the resources there to address that at the earliest possible opportunity, rather than saying to them, you know what, you need to go to the family court, it's a private matter and we can't help you. Because we know that then that is going to be starting their journey, which is not always the greatest way to start their separation journey through the court. And the court, you know, Sir Andrew McFarlane has explicitly stated that, you know, there's lots of families that don't need to be in the court, and we need to be encouraging that. So we're also asking our legal community to be thinking about, when parents come to them for advice, they're saying to them, okay, if you've not been to mediation, have you thought about X, Y, Z? Because that might be helpful before we go into court.
Yeah, definitely. I think you both got it right there. The system needs a lot of work on it.
Yes.
What in terms of overcoming those barriers, what would you like to see in terms of a vision for how the system works in 2 years or 3 years time? What if you've done a really good job of getting some of those barriers removed, what does that system now look like? I just said, like, both of you were like, yeah, we want to answer this question.
You go first.
I think look, the system is changing. We've attended a lot of consultations with the Ministry of Justice, we've attended consultations, we've even reached out to the Children's Commissioner, we've tried to help people to think about the systems that families are in, also in the system of their own family environment as well. So we are trying to break some of those barriers. One of the things that we, for ourselves, we need to develop further evidence so that people can have more confidence in the program that we're delivering, and that people think that actually this is part of the solution. Rather, we're not a barrier, we're a solution to the problem, rather than seeing us as being someone on the sideline or offered as and when parents. So we're hoping that maybe in a couple of years time, that programs like ourselves are also considered alongside mediation, so that families can be navigated to the right direction based on their need, rather than you have to go there because that's the next process. There's not a tick box. And I'm hoping that the family hubs might change some of that as well, because they're coming on board. And they also got parental conflict and relationship-based work there. So we're hoping that more practitioners like us are trained, and they're available locally to lots of families, so that this early relationship type of support can be offered at the earliest opportunity. That's what I hope.
Yeah, totally agree, Cam. And also what I'm hoping is that with the government understanding, and certainly from the work you do, Heidi, with us, and also further research done from an academic arm, that the government has to, not can, has to invest in further resource and support for the judges, that when they are in court, instead of asking parents or suggesting to parents they would like them to take further help, if not mediation, something else, but because parents have to fund it and financially, you know, commit to this, the judges cannot put any pressure on them, because they can't put that financial restraint on parents. They can't do that. So the government needs to really look at what help's needed from that area of referral. And the government needs to put in that where the judges feel that there's a real need for these parents to have this sort of intervention and help and support, then they can actually order these parents to attend. Because if we are going to, again, look at safeguarding children, it breaks my heart. And some days I find it very tough, and some days I even think I can't do this anymore. And the reason I do it is because I see children who are broken. And they're broken because they're in a system that's already broken, and there is no way out. And unless these parents get in front of myself or Cam or one of my team, and I'll be honest, even to where we have to really, really challenge them, or even sometimes, you know, just bang their heads together and say, what are you doing? What are you doing? Your children are only lent to you. Your children have every right to have a childhood that they can obviously have fond memories and to grow. And all you're doing is destroying it because you want to fight and you want to win. And until we have practitioners confident, capable, and there's some bloody good ones out there, absolutely doing it, but in a process and a system that it's identified that we can challenge parents and not worry about a complaint coming through the door. Because the reason we have challenge is the reason is because it's safeguarding. But then the parent doesn't like it, and then we get a complaint. Okay, fine, bring it on, as far as I'm concerned. Because, you know, everything is, I can stand up and say, I'm doing it in the best interest of the children. And that is where we need to be. So the government needs to also have an active role in this, to say, we're doing something for the outcomes for our children now and for the future.
But I suppose what we're hoping to achieve, that is, by parents doing this work, what we are hoping that actually it's beneficial for the government, because we're going to have less children suffering from mental health, more stability in the child's life. Parents are parenting their children together rather than apart, is what they think they should be doing. Actually, what we've helped them to do is align their parenting, so they can build that safe structure for their child.
Definitely. I love the visions, as always. I always enjoy working with both of you and doing the impact reports. And we've obviously, with the social return and investment report that we did, we really showed that there would be massive savings across various different statutory agencies and public sector bodies if they were to invest in this kind of service. And, you know, it wasn't just the criminal justice system, the courts, it went across schools, social work, everything. I think we have a little guest joining us.
Waving. I think it's really important, Heidi, that government bodies also recognise the importance of a social impact report as well, because I don't think that is seen as guiding principle for academic research, I suppose research that's done in a slightly different way, if that makes sense. And therefore, those have been some of the barriers, because people haven't fully accepted the reports that are being created, which have been independent, yeah, independently evaluated, but they don't see that as being a piece of research, if that makes sense.
I think I'm being turned into a princess with this going on the back of my head. But yeah, I think one of one of the things with the reports is because social return on investment looks at the wider impacts, and it looks from every stakeholder's perspectives, whereas a lot of what I would call not clinical research but like technical research, yeah, is just looking from the perspective of that particular statutory agency and what the impact and value for money or savings are for them. We have bells jingling at the same time. So it often then misses all of those other agencies that will potentially have savings, as yeah, well as, you know, what difference does it make to a child, to the parents, to their family, and, you know, all of those impacts that they're not necessarily covered in the research, because the focus is on, you know, we want to prove that actually spending this money as social services or as a local authority is worthwhile. So what's it actually costing us versus what does it then reduce in terms of value for money? It's, yeah, this is the reality of lives.
and I think that's given us when we explain that the local authorities really get that, if that makes sense. They really get the idea of cost saving, because how do we measure that? And we think that your reports have really been instrumental for us to help local authorities and government bodies to understand, are you aware that by doing this here, we all know that early intervention can prevent families from engaging in or touch pointing other services. So I think your social impact report has really supported us to advocate the cost savings from a government perspective. By working with two parents together, actually you can save X, Y, Z.
Yeah, perfect. So I'm conscious of time. I've had you on here for nearly 40 minutes. Is there anything else, Claire or Cam, that you'd want to share with anyone that's listening? We haven't had any questions come in, so I'll just double check again in a second whilst you're talking, if there's anything that anyone wants.
I think it's important just to say, Heidi, look, if whether it's a professional, anybody, or even a parent, just not sure of what or how they're feeling at the moment within their relationship, but they're feeling they need some help and support, even if it is just to sit down and talk, pick up the phone. We offer a free half an hour consultation with one of the consultants, and at least it gives everybody then the opportunity of knowing what we do, how we do it, and what's offered, and then the choice is theirs. But we're here to help, and most importantly, you know, whoever you are, wherever you are, you know, when you're going through tough times, especially when it looks like a separation or divorce is heading the way, it's a massive change for all of you, but most important, the children. So as parents, I say, please, one of the biggest mental health preventers today, in a sense, is, you know, is leading by example, showing your children that even when things aren't going too good, too right, you can put your hand up and say, over here, please, I need a bit of help, because that's what we all need sometimes, all of us, nobody knows it all. So yeah, to give us a ring, to give Annabelle a ring at the office, book a half an hour slot in and have a chat, be great.
And we have got the 4-week intervention, you know, we've put it out on LinkedIn as well. So if anyone's out there or knows of a family or is a family, you know, listening or going through this, you know, pick up the phone. We're offering free consultations, and we've got some national lottery funding to offer the early help, the 4-week intervention. So, you know, we're hoping that we can do that work with as many more families, especially with Christmas coming up. It's always a difficult time for children and families anyway.
All right, thank you very much. It's been so good talking to you both today. I'm sure there would be more questions, but this crazy one beside me is all her interesting facial expressions. I think she wants to be famous. So she's
today. And she's actually the person that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you.
No,
so there's no point doing my hair. Thank you. Let me just stop the live stream.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the podcast. Lots of amazing gems and wisdom from the very passionate Claire and Cam from Parenting Apart. They really, really want to improve outcomes for children. And it's fascinating to hear the approach that they've taken with local authorities and other statutory agencies. And of course, the importance of measuring impact, which is music to my ears. For those of you that don't know, I'm Heidi Fisher from Make an Impact, and I have over 20 years of experience with measuring social and economic impacts, including social return on investment. Please do get in touch if you need help with measuring, communicating, or reporting your impact. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the podcast. Thank you. Bye.